I'm Dave Drexler. On this segment of Inside Art, we welcome the author of the Raleigh Waters Mystery Series, following the exploits of a guitar-slinging detective who balances band gigs, family issues, and personal temptation while solving crime in the soft underbelly of our San Diego environs. Corey Lynn Feynman's first two novels in the series, Black's Beach Shuffle and Borderfield Blues, won the Hollywood Book Festival Awards for Best Detective Fiction, among other accolades. Now Desert City Diva, published by Severn House, follows Raleigh Waters' investigation of a 20-year-old unsolved murder case amidst the weird world of alien-obsessed cults and strange characters in the real-life Anza Borrego hideaway known as Slab City. Corey, it's a pleasure to have you back on Inside Art, and congratulations on this third novel.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Slab City. Now, it sounds to me like something that may have been inspired by a Huell Hauser episode of California's Gold. I know he went there, and I know people. It's kind of this unusual place. Tell me about Slab City.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think it's actually, over the last 10 years perhaps, developed a kind of cult following in its own way. I chanced upon it 10, 12 years ago. I was driving over in Imperial Valley. We were visiting the Salton Sea, my wife and I, and we just kind of kept going on this road. And there was a sign for Slab City, and we said, what is that? And there were people living there. And I mean, this is very serious desert environment that people were living in. There were, trailers and all sorts of things. And you could tell people were actually living there. And then what really caught my attention was there was a community. There was a bookstore and a library. There was a cafe. And the one that really got me in terms of the Raleigh Waters idea was there was a stage set up where they have jam sessions every Saturday night.
And is that to a slab?
That's also on a slab. Yeah, it's also a slab. The slabs come from a fort that was there. It was built in the Second World War. I've heard it was for Patton training his troops to go on their desert expedition.
Okay.
That they trained there. But after the war, they didn't use it much, and it kind of fell into disrepair. And then some camper in the 1960s kind of came upon it and set up shop and started the whole thing.
And it's become a haven. Well, it has a long history as a haven for iconoclasts and interesting people of all sorts.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's an interesting group. Some are clearly people who just need to not be in civilization, need to get away. It's obviously cheap. You don't pay a dime to live there. Of course, with that comes, there's no water, there's no electricity.
It's purely a squatter's community?
Purely a squatter's community. Huh. They're occasionally, I've been reading about occasional run-ins with the police, but so far it's maintained. And then kind of it's developed more. There's a place there called East Jesus.
Which you can't make this up.
No, you can't make this stuff up. That's what's great. Half of this is written for me. And it's actually an outdoor sculpture garden that people have kind of contributed over the years. And specifically, they use waste material, stuff that they've collected. I mean, and there's some kind of amazing sculpture they've put in there.
So they're forerunners in the reusable community.
Absolutely. And some of the people are very dedicated to those kind of concepts. They really are off the grid for a reason, and they make a lifestyle out of it. So it's a real mix of people really doing something kind of idealistically and some who are just getting stuck outside the outside society.
Well, the potential then for a Raleigh Waters mystery must have really struck you there, obviously.
Yeah, right away I said, okay, I have to put one of his books here, or at least a good part of it. And, partly because of the weirdness of the place, the uniqueness of the place, and partly because I had to get him up on that stage with some local musicians. So I managed to do both.
Well, that's a big part of Raleigh is his performing background. And he still dabbles, is that right?
Yeah. So he's slightly in the in-between between dabbling and playing full-time. He's over 40, and he kind of had to settle down at some point. His days of making it big as a musician kind of passed. So he still likes to play, but playing also tends to lead him into his old life, which he wants to stay away from.
So what were some of the hazards he had to deal with?
Well, mostly alcohol was his big hazard. But, he was a little susceptible to women, too many women, and caused all sorts of trouble, which eventually ended up, it's in the first book, in a car accident he had, which kind of cut him off. And then now he's kind of making his way back.
This character isn't drawn from your personal life at all.
Oh, not. I was, no, never. First of all, well, first,
you were, the musician part is true.
The musician part is true, actually, yeah. And I mean, there is definitely some of me in Raleigh. I'm a keyboard player. I actually played keyboards here for many years in a band called Bad Dog and around with some other bands in town. And we played similar kind of music to Raleigh. Now, Raleigh's a guitar player, and my little joke is that Raleigh is my revenge on guitar players.
I see.
Because I was a keyboard player. We're always in the back. Guitar players stand out in front, get all the action, so to speak.
So the first two novels, then, take us – maybe you can set up for Desert City Diva by going backward and talking about what you did the first two times with this character.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting process, and it's nice because Desert Diva, I think I'm really getting Raleigh figured out and the people he hangs around with. But he started out having to deal with an internet company in Black Speech Shuffle. He gets hired by an old friend who's working for the company. And that one actually started – I was using all of my experience, both as a musician and also working for a company here in town called MP3.com, which blew up as most many
famously
in both directions. And I wrote it while I was still working there. I started writing on it when I was still working there, on the downside of our time there.
Okay, and then that was the Border City Blues. Then
Black Speech Shuffle,
right?
Then Borderfield Blues. Another one that kind of came out of my driving around the county with my wife, which is something we like to do on weekends. And that took place down near the border, as you can tell, but specifically it was a place called Borderfield State Park, which I don't think a lot of San Diegans know of. It's a state park. It is right on the border as you go. It's basically west of 5 as you get down to the border. And it's this bird sanctuary. It's where the Tijuana River flows through. There are people down there riding horses on the beach. It's very pastoral, but of course, it's right there on the border, and the Border Patrol is there.
It's an intense place.
It's a very intense place, yeah, even though it doesn't look like it right from the start.
But still peaceful. That's pastoral in some ways.
That's what was kind of fascinating about it. And there's people living down there on small farms and houses, and just that whole mix of things was quite fascinating. So that's why I kind of ended up with Raleigh there. Also, when I first went there, the new fence hadn't been built. And on Sunday, there were families on either side of the fence sharing stories, food, money, you know, same families.
Did that come into the story at all?
We talk about it, but it didn't. It isn't specifically in the story.
Well, one of the great things about your series is that you have so much of San Diego in it. What to you is great about San Diego as far as a place to explore novel themes or settings?
That's an interesting question, because when I started the series, one of my goals was to make San Diego a character. We haven't had enough novels, I think, set in San Diego. We need more.
No, you're right. Like the big cities have.
Yeah, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, New York. Yeah, they're all more than covered, you know. So that was one of the reasons. And I think one of my key things was that it's not – most people see it as the tourist city. They think of the zoo. They think of Three World. They think of the beaches. And I wanted to talk about, you know, the real world underneath us. We have, you know – we have our share of underworld just as much as anybody.
Well, actually, it's a great news town because there's the border and there's the ocean, there's the military. There's so much that you can bring into it as a novelist.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned the one I'm working on now. I don't have a title for it quite yet. I'm decided I needed to get the military involved, get the Navy involved in the next one. So
okay. Yeah. So now it's Desert City Diva. You headed east And this new novel is a new departure on a new from a new publisher too.
This Desert City Diva is published by Severn House, and they're a British publisher. So it's been kind of interesting to me. They actually found me, which is like that doesn't happen too often. I got lucky there. I mean, it was a little bit on my own initiative, but they asked me to send them the last book, Borderfield Blues, and they really liked it and said we'd like to offer you a deal on the next one.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
very nice. And then I have an option on the fourth one, so we'll see.
Well, who are some of the characters of note in Desert City Diva?
Okay, well, there's Raleigh Waters. Of course, we've talked a little bit about him. He's a guitar-playing detective. The kind of key character in this is Macy Starr, who's quite a bit younger than he is, just in her early 20s, and she's a DJ, electronic music DJ.
Yeah.
So in some ways, they're kind of, you know, wary of each other that way.
It's oil and water, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But she has a really interesting challenge for him. She has this one-string guitar. It's called a diddly bow. And this is actually a real thing that exists, diddly bows. But it has a picture of two people on the back, and she thinks they may be her parents. And that's what kind of grabs Raleigh's attention.
Okay, and then this is the case that he pursues.
And that's the case he pursues.
What takes him to Slab City?
What they find out is that the fellow who made – there's apparently somebody else looking for this guitar, he finds out. And they find out that the fellow who made this may be living in Slab City. And that's how they end up there. And actually, that's where I pulled in some interesting guitar stuff, because I actually pulled in a place called Guitar Trader, which is gone now.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be the kind of guitar store in San Diego. Got your guitars repaired there. Got all sorts of good advice there. And it's fortunate they're gone now. They were an independent company. But this fellow they're looking for was a guitar tech there.
Okay, and then who are some of the other unusual people that that are part of this?
Yeah, so one of the most unusual is Cool Bob, who lives in Slab City, and Bob has great fondness for both music and automatic weapons, and in fact, there's a whole little interplay with him and Macy about automatic weapons. He finds a certain, how should we say, sexual gratification in, uh-huh. in automatic weapons and girls. It's nothing too scary. It's just odd.
One of the things that readers should look for are the references, and you have some when you make names of characters. That's a unique gift that you have.
Yeah, well, I very specifically have a way of creating characters, and I often will mix a first name of some musician or musical product with the last name being the same. So Raleigh Waters himself, it's for Roland Waters, Muddy Waters being the last name. And Roland being a company that makes
instruments
yeah. and equipment, yeah. And Bonnie Hammond, his friend on the police force, named for Bonnie Raitt and Hammond Organs. But one of the new ones in the current book is a little different. His name is Eric Ozzie, and he's a former baseball player here in town on the professional team. And he's actually named after two Padres who were musical. Eric Schau, who was a guitar player.
The late Eric Schau.
Late Eric Schau, right, who was a jazz playing guitar player. And then Ozzie Smith, who later played for the St. Louis Cardinals, but Ozzie actually is on an album.
Is he a singer or a player?
He's a singer. He's a singer. I've heard it once. He's a passable singer, but there may have been some studio trickery involved.
Oh, it's a fun read. Can you give us a little sample of the book here? Can you
sure.
give a little excerpt?
Sure. I'm going to pick something here that's about halfway through the book, and it's after Raleigh and Macy have gone out to Slab City. They're kind of fortunate that he borrows his father's RV to go out there. So they're out there. And in the last chapter, we just found out something bit Raleigh. That's kind of the end of the chapter. So it starts here. A spider loomed in the darkness. It was huge. It had long fangs that gleamed like glittering gold sabers. Raleigh turned to run, but his legs wouldn't work. It was like running in deep sand. The spider captured him in its web. It bit into his leg with its giant gold fangs. He jolted awake and looked around. The light in the emergency ward of Brawley General Hospital seeped under the edges of curtains surrounding his bed. It was a strange shade of green, like something you'd see on the bridge of a movie spaceship. He felt better now, stronger and clearer. There were no giant spiders.
An excerpt from Desert City Diva by my guest, its author, Corey Lynn Feynman. Corey, how do you balance the humor and the story and advancing all of that in the characters? It seems like that's the art to me.
I agree. That is the art. And that part, in a sense, the balancing doesn't happen until I've finished at least a couple of drafts. I'm getting the plot. I'm getting people and places. I'm getting names. And then finally, I'm able to really start writing in some ways, you know, to come in with the little bits of jokes and a little bit of humor that comes in and to kind of finesse things like names or the way people talk. And that's really important to me is getting people's conversational style correct, because I think that gives you a lot about the person without me having to describe them a lot.
So do you think you have a pretty good ear from that?
I think I do. I guess I'll have to hear from other people on that. But I think that's one of the strengths of my book is the dialogue and the characters.
Well, Corey, you're going to be appearing at a book signing pretty soon here. Why don't you tell us about that and where it's going to be?
Sure. I'll be at Mysterious Galaxy in Kearny Mesa, San Diego's kind of best independent mystery and science fiction bookstore. And I will be there on January 30th. That's a Saturday. At 2:00 in the afternoon. And that'll be kind of the official book release party.
Great. So thanks again for being my guest on Inside Art. We look forward to having you back for the fourth Raleigh Waters mystery.
Great. I look forward to being here.
Desert City Diva by Corey Lynn Feynman is published by Severn House and available through Amazon and SevernHouse.com. Also, Corey will be appearing at the Mysterious Galaxy in Kearny Mesa Saturday, January 30th. More information is available at CoreyLynnFeynman.com. Inside Art is made possible with support from the members of Jazz 88.3. If you missed any of tonight's program, you can listen to it again online at jazz88.org/inside-art. Again, my thanks to Corey Lynn Feynman and San Diego Symphony's Martha Gilmer. For Jazz 88.3, I'm Dave Drexler. Good night.